With Green Farm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein your way.
Thanks to the fantastic Chris and Kira.
Stop being so nice to them. They were trying to beat us up 5 minutes ago.
You were dead right. I showed a weakness and now they're after me. I'm behind Kira's mom.
Always attack, Donica. Go for it. That's what you're. That's where you've fallen down. I thought you'd know that after rugby.
Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends? It's Thursday, the 8th of April.
Coming up on Game On tonight, we're live in Tala as the Republic of Ireland take on Denmark.
Katie McCabe lets the ball go early up towards the run of Denise O'Sullivan, and now Barrett for Ireland, and there's the lead goal. The Republic of Ireland take the lead after 13 minutes. Amber Barrett with the goal, Ireland in front in Athens.
We get the latest news from Augusta with Greg Allen.
20 under by Stenson at the open in 16, 20 under by Jason Day. The 2020 Masters. The long-awaited Masters has a long-awaited champion in Dustin Johnson.
Ruby brings us all the racing gossip after day one at Aintree.
Andizobo goes well clear, going down towards the final fence. Has surely only got a jump it to win, and he sails over this. Clan Dizobo, 20 lengths clear now from Clondor Castle. Native River just coming to the final fence now. But it's going to be third time lucky in this race for Clan Dizobo. For Paul...
We look ahead at the Women's Six Nations and the Champions Cup quarter-final with Fiona Hayes and Stephen Ferris.
Stephen Ferris! And Ireland have transformed themselves and the game and the crowd. They take the lead.
Donica, you know he posted a picture of himself today from Thoman Park where they beat you nine years ago. Delighted with himself. We'll have to remind him of that.
Bleach my eyeballs looking at it.
We'll also have Jeb Shepherd, who will cast his eye on American sport.
Mahomes throws, pass, caught, Williams, touchdown! Kansas City jumps on top.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Now, Donica, there is a lot of GA news and we're going to get to it very, very shortly. But first of all, we are going to cross over to Tony O'Donoghue, who is at Tala Stadium for the Republic of Ireland's friendly against Denmark. Tony.
How are you doing, Marie? How's things?
Sure, we're great now. Not a bother you?
I'm grand, I feel blessed to be here. It's a beautiful day, sun is shining, the pitch at Tala looks fantastic, and I get a chance to see the girls in green up against Denmark. This is the first time since her appointment in September 2017 that Vera Pauw has had a chance to look at her players in a friendly. She's asked for a higher quality opposition, and she certainly has that in Denmark. They were beaten finalists in the last European Championships, and this time around they qualified easily for a group that included Italy. They're ranked at 14 in the world, and in their ranks they have the world's most expensive player, 28-year-old striker Pernille Harder, who signed for Chelsea from last year's Champions League runners-up Wolfsburg for a fee of £250,000. So they've plenty of experience in that team. It'll be a pleasure watching her play. But Republic of Ireland have picked a rather strong team, you'd have to say. Grace Maloney continues in goal. Her grandfather from Tipperary, her grandmother from Cavan, the Reading goalkeeper, is in the form of her life, actually. She's been the top goalkeeper in the WSL and the team of the week time and time again. So she gets to continue in goal after she did well against Germany the last time the girls in green played here. It looks like we're going to have a back three for Ireland of Nia Fahey, Louise Quinn, Diane Caldwell. This is an 80th cap for Diane Caldwell, so a big night for her. The wing backs look like being Caoimhe Keenan of Celtic and Katie McCabe of Arsenal. Katie, of course, the Ireland captain. And then a midfield trio of Denise O'Sullivan, Megan Connolly and Jamie Finn of Shelburne, Amber Barrett and Heather Payne up front. So a strong lineup, but they will be tested against Denmark, no doubt about that. But as I say, a beautiful evening, and of course you want to watch Game On or listen to Game On, but you can watch this as well. It's available on the RTE player. You can get it as you walk around on your phone, you can get it on your iPad, you can get it on your computer, you can get it on your telly. Kickoff here at Tala is at 6:30.
We can be watching it here in studio while we're chatting as well.
You already are, girl.
And Tony, I did hear your interview with Vera Pauw earlier in the week, and I got the sense from listening to her that it feels like new beginnings. You know, she's learned quite a bit from her stint so far, but she's looking now ahead to this new campaign. She feels that she's got a lot of work to do still, and it's almost starting over.
Yeah, I mean, she feels, you know, if she had left the girls at this point, that they all had unfinished business, you know. Yeah, unfortunately, they finished third in their group, lost the last three games, two, though, against Germany. The killer were the away defeats against Ukraine and Greece. But, yeah, there's been a huge improvement. I mean, everyone can see that. And a huge commitment from the girls, and in fairness as well, it's been matched by the FAI. I only wish there could be crowds here, because you would see in the crowds that there's a great affection for this particular Irish team among the Irish public. I feel that as well. So they're hoping that in the World Cup campaign to come, that first of all they get a decent draw on the 30th of April, and after that, that they can, you know, probably go better than their seeding and qualify for the next World Cup. That'll be in Australia and New Zealand in a couple of years' time. So yeah, there's excitement around the Irish team, certainly. She's put out a strong team tonight. She has another friendly against Belgium. That's on Sunday away. That's in Brussels. And we might see more squad players, if you like, start in that one. And I think she will try and rotate a bit tonight as well. But I think she's put out certainly probably her strongest 11 that she can against what's going to be a very, very good Denmark team.
And that's the thing, Tony, isn't it? Playing quality opposition must be good for us, you know, at this point.
That's it. She's asked for that, Vera, so that we can test exactly where we are. But Pernille Harder in particular, I'm looking forward to seeing how good a player she is. From all accounts and from what I've heard, she really has quality. And I mean, Chelsea put their money where their mouth was, if you like, in that regard, and signed her. She's got absolute excellent ability. So really looking forward to seeing her in action this evening.
OK, Tony, thanks so much. Enjoy it, and we might check in with you a little bit later on. Now, Donica, we know that the inter-county competitions are going to return in a month's time, and that the All-Ireland Football Championship will be straight knockout, and the hurling counties will again get one second chance and a back door. So the GAA today announced their revised fixture schedule. The All-Ireland hurling final will be on the weekend of the 21st of August, and then the football decider will be a week later, and then club action returning the first weekend of September. So next month, Donica, happy days, we will have a return of inter-county Gaelic games. So Divisions 1 and 2 of the Allianz Hurling League will be up first on the 8th of May, and then the lower divisions and the Football League returning the following week, and then Championship in June. So we have dates.
It's fantastic to have dates. Not only for the players, who we know have been doing non-stop Zoom classes, keeping themselves ticking over, but Marie, just to get excited about something down the track, it just really is so, so important.
Yeah, and unfortunately, Donica, some people have been training as well when they weren't supposed to be. So the Monaghan football manager, Seamus McEnany, was banned today by his own county for 12 weeks. Monaghan released a statement saying that they acknowledge there was a breach of COVID-19 regulations. They held an internal investigation, and this came after reports in this morning's Irish Independent that a dossier had been sent to the Department of Justice, which appeared to show the Monaghan footballers engaged in group training. So hopefully that will be the end of that now, and other counties will be paying heed to these suspensions, and that no other counties will be engaging in the training. But I guess they're back next week. So at this stage, hopefully will.
Yeah, you'd like them to hold the line, because they know exactly the start point now. And I'll be honest with you, I always notice that I'd rather come back fresh. I'd rather be willing and able and everyone excited to be at training rather than doing sneaky sessions that don't really count when you can't work together. Yeah, hold the line for a little bit longer and let's all work together.
Okay, so let's turn our attention and now to golf, because finally, after what feels like a very long build-up, the 2021 Masters is officially underway at Augusta, and Greg Allen is watching it for us. Greg?
Yeah, well, I can give you the leaderboard first, because it's a mixture of some bad scoring, good scoring. Rory McIlroy in among the bad scoring, but he just made a birdie. So Rory McIlroy is 2 over par after 8 holes. But really, the ball is going left and right. There were wipes right, very far right on the second and third. Managed to retrieve par on both of those, but he hit it left on 6 in the par 3. Bogey there. He came up short on the 5th. Bogey there. Obviously made another bogey on the 7th, because he missed that one to the short of the green. So basically, it's all over the place. And that birdie that he made on the 8th might just settle him. So he hit two beautiful shots on the 570-yard uphill par 5 8th hole to around 15 feet and an eagle putt from that range. And fingers crossed that might just settle him, because those first 7 holes, he was 3 over par for them, were not a good sign that the new coaching arrangement with Pete Cowan is having any immediate effect. He himself has said that could be a long-term solving problem to his problems with his swing. And it does look like that might be be the case. But that birdie on the 8th on the par 5 has settled him down to a situation where he's 2 over after 7. That's not the worst scenario of players that are out there right now. There's quite a lot of players who are struggling. Victor Hovland, who started with a triple bogey on the first hole, he's 2 over after 11. He's a very fine young player who'll very likely be in the Ryder Cup team for Porter Carrington and Whistling Straits come September. Dustin Johnson, he too has been struggling, and he has been back on 1 over par after 9 currently. Brooks Koepka, with that knee that he had only had operated on 3 weeks ago, he's 1 over after 10. And Shane Lowry started really well, actually. He hit a drive down the first with the driver, taking driver on a tight driving hole. A lot of players are taking 3 wood. He hit the middle of the fairway and hit a beautiful approach shot to 12 feet beneath the pin, missed the putt, but walked off with a safe par. And he's just hit his drive down the second, which looked like it was okay, but it spilled right and just kept running and running and running. So he's going to be hitting a second shot on the par 5 second from the pine straw, so won't be able to reach the green in 2, but no great difficulty there in terms of making par from the pine straw. So Shane Lowry, level par after 1, and that chance of birdie in the second doesn't look like it's going to happen for him. So top of the leaderboard, there is good scoring. Siwoo Kim, the players champion from 2017, the Korean, he's only 25, still a young player with a lot of talent, and he's showing it today. 3 under par after 14 holes. Hideki Matsuyama, the 29-year-old Japanese player, 5 times a PGA Tour winner, he's 3 under after 12. Christian Bezuidenhout of South Africa, 3 times European Tour winner, very popular and very good young 26-year-old South African player, he's 3 under after 10. And Mark Leishman, who's something of a very strong, consistent player around Augusta, the veteran Australian who was in the playoff for the 2015 Open Championship at St Andrews, finishing tied second there to Zach Johnson. Mark Leishman is 3 under after birding 3 of the first 4 holes. In the group on 2 under, Will Zalatoris, who is a really, really strong young player. He's made his last 11 cuts. He was 6th in the US Open last September. He's on 2 under par, as is Brian Harman and Webb Simpson. And in the group on 1 under, a very interesting character, Patrick Reed, the 2018 Masters champion. And of all the players actually under par, I might as well give you the rest of them. Paul Casey, Mackenzie Hughes, Bernd Wiesberger, Matt Wallace and Gary Woodland. So 13 players are under par, and we've almost 70 players on the course right now. So course conditions are fairly tough. McIlroy on 2 over par after 7 holes, or 8 holes I should say, and Shane Lowry 1 over par, I should say level par after 1. Okay, say it again. Shane's level, McIlroy is 2 over, so it's not a great start, but Shane started okay.
And Greg, just, you know, having watched Rory so often, are you worried about him?
I've seen Rory go through slumps before. He went through a horrendous slump in 2013. When he went to from Titleist clubs to Nike clubs, the transition was very difficult. He had won the PGA Championship in 2012. He was PGA Tour Player of the Year in 2012. Had a terrible slump in 13. When he had this two-way miss, the ball going right and the ball going left, and he couldn't tell which side it was going to miss on. We saw it at the Irish Open at Carlton House that year, where he missed the cut badly. And then the following year, in 2014, he wins the PGA Championship and the Open Championship and a World Golf Championship event in succession. So he's been down this road before, where his form has slumped away and he's come back. But it's a while ago now, and that's the big issue. And changing coach to Pete Cowan is supposed to be sorting this out. But he did say in his press conference here that this could be a long-term plan, not something that's going to happen anytime soon. Maybe those 2 really good shots to the 8th green that I was speaking about might be the indicator that some of the work that he's doing at Pete Cowan is beginning to bed itself in. Let's hope so, because at the moment, 2 over after 7, he has to find a bit more inspiration.
Yeah, for sure, Greg. Let's hope that he grows into the competition, and on Sunday we'll be talking about him in glowing terms. Thanks as always. We'll check in with you a little bit later on. Now let's turn our attention to American sports, although we will be chatting first to Jeff Shepherd about the golf, because, Shep, there's no Tiger Woods there because of the crash, and yesterday the findings of what happened came out.
Yeah, he was going incredibly fast, about twice the speed limit there, 75, 80 miles an hour, something along those lines, and lost control of his vehicle. And look, I mean, I know we've talked about this before and all the reporting that was done. I mean, quite honestly, guys, I mean, he's lucky to be alive. I mean, and I mean, obviously he had very serious injuries to his legs that are, you know, more than likely going to keep him out of golf, you know, all this year into next year. But at speeds like that, hitting a tree, I mean, really, just lucky to be able to say he's still alive at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. Shep, we haven't caught up in a while, and there's a lot going on over there sports-wise. We might get you to fill us in on it, but you might start with the NFL owners approving a 17-game season for this coming playoffs.
Yeah, so it's been rumored and been talked about the last couple of years. And really, guys, this is kind of, I think, the first step into what they really want to do. I think what they really want to do is have an 18-game season and maybe two preseason games, two exhibition games to start the year. But it's a little bit easier when it comes to the negotiations with the players' union to go from 16 to 17 than it is to go from 16 to 18. So they're taking this initial step. They're eliminating one of the exhibition games and going to have a 17-game regular season. And basically what they decided to do was have the AFC teams host the 17th game this season. And it doesn't necessarily, you know, fall at the end of the season. That extra game will be somewhere in the middle. So all NFC teams will play 9 road games this year, and then next year they'll turn around and host and have 9 home games. And so, we keep seeing more and more states, and let's just be honest, guys. I mean, it's all about money. Like, let's not kid ourselves. This is obviously what it's all about: money, TV ratings, you know, negotiations when it comes to TV contracts. And the rise of what we've seen with states legalizing sports gambling here in the States in the last, you know, 2 or 3 years since the Supreme Court ruled that they could do it, it's taken off, and, you know, the money is flowing like never before, and that is mainly what this is all about.
And Shep, just some disturbing news, really, the disturbing news is Deshaun Watson and the sexual assault allegations, but it has come to pass that Nike have suspended their deal with him, which seems like the right call.
Yeah, I mean, look, guys, you know, this has been a developing situation, and we really haven't had a chance to talk about it yet, but we're at 22 women who have now claimed some level of misconduct, sexual, physical misconduct with Deshaun Watson, one of the star players in the NFL. He's a quarterback of the Houston Texans. He has been disgruntled this offseason for some, you know, things going on with management, and then all of this has really started to come out pretty much in the last month. And so, Nike is now suspending, deals with him. I would assume there's going to be other sponsors that are going to do the exact same thing. Right now, it's just in the, you know, filing lawsuit stage. He is trying to get, some of the women to, like, you know, declare, like, you know, be named. Right now, they're all just under the name Jane Doe, but a lot of it revolves around visits to, giving massages and things like that. And so, you know, there's going to be a whole lot more that comes out. He has hired a very high-powered attorney in the state of Texas who has done a lot in the world of sports when it comes to athletes who've gotten into trouble, and that's who he has retained as his legal counsel, which is a pretty bold move. There is a lot more that's going to be going on here. The Texans have been quiet about it. The league has been quiet about it. They're letting, you know, the investigations take place, which, quite honestly, is how they need to, the NFL needs to respond that way. They don't need to be making comments and sticking their nose out there on the side of an issue that hasn't been resolved yet. But this is far from over, and this is going to have a major impact, however it turns out, on Deshaun Watson, the Texans, and really the NFL as well.
Yeah, I think that there'll be a lot of people interested to see the way the NFL do treat how this plays out. And just, Shep, I want to remind you of something. The last time we were talking to you, I'm pretty sure that you said Gonzaga were unbeatable.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I said you would have to be an idiot to think anybody but Gonzaga. I'm almost positive those are the exact
words. Sounds familiar.
Well, and look, I mean, I think long-time listeners of this program would know I am an idiot. So, look, the Baylor Bears just played a phenomenal basketball game on Monday night. I mean, guys, they led from the opening tip. The great Gonzaga player, Jalen Suggs, he's their point guard. He got into some foul trouble early on. And, I mean, he had to go back. You know, he picked up 2 quick fouls in the first couple of minutes of the game. And, you know, typically when that happens, you go to the bench and you sit the whole rest of the first half. And he was back out there like 5 or 6 minutes later because they were just getting the doors blown off of him. Baylor, it's an unbelievable story. Just, I'll give a real quick recap. About 15 years ago, Baylor's program was basically blown up from the inside out. The coach was in a bunch of trouble. Players were dealing drugs. One player actually shot and murdered another player on the team. I mean, it's a soap opera. It's really terrible. And less than 2 decades later, they have completely rebuilt things. The coach who took over back then is still the coach now, and he has led them to the national championship. And say, you know, there's a lot that goes on with college athletics and all this different stuff, but it is a really amazing story for Coach Scott Drew and that program to be able to get to this level. But just, I mean, again, Gonzaga, one loss all year. It just happens to become the national championship game. And so you're looking, you know, one more year goes by. It hasn't happened since 1975, 1976. No one's going undefeated in college basketball.
Well, it's hard to move away from a story like that. But sticking with college football or college athleteship, what's going on with name, images, likeness when it comes there?
Okay, so the crux of this whole situation is a couple of years ago, you know, the athletes were like, why are they selling video games with someone who looks and acts and plays like I do? And why is the school able to use my image in its ad campaigns, but I don't get to get any money about it, you know, from this? And so, you know, think about all the things that have happened in American sports in the last year when it comes to, like, you know, players' voice and control and different things like that. And the timing of it couldn't work out better for these athletes. They basically, the NCAA and the lawyers for some of these players, and it's current players and former players, they were at the Supreme Court in the last couple of last week arguing about, you know, basically the status of amateur athletes and whether or not players can profit off their own name, image, or likeness. And how does that go about, you know? And so it's just a really fascinating discussion that's going on. There's probably not going to be a ruling made for another couple of months at the Supreme Court, but different states around the country are already enacting laws that are allowing players to potentially profit off of that. So it's really going to be interesting to play out, to see how this plays out. Well, you know, I know it's different in America than it is over in Ireland with kind of how players are compensated in scholarships and all this different stuff, but this will completely turn amateur athletics on its backside if, you know, the Supreme Court rules with the players.
Yeah, absolutely, Chef. Nothing like a row over image rights. Thanks so much for joining us on Game On. We'll catch up with you real soon. Have a brilliant time, Chef. A good weekend. We're going to take a quick break and we're back chatting rugby.
With Green Farm, a quick and easy addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Game on 2FM.
Okay, 2 rugby, and we're delighted to be joined by two of the hardest hitters of our game. The only thing that matches their physicality on the pitch is their honesty and directness off it. We're delighted to be joined by Fiona Hayes and Stephen Ferris. How are you guys?
Hi, Donard.
Fiona, I'll go to you first. We got our teams today for the Six Nations game against Wales at the weekend, and there was a lot of talk about the inclusions of sevens players, and we certainly got one with Eve Higgins coming in to join Senny in the centre. Are you excited about seeing her play there?
Absolutely, Donica. I actually can't wait. I've been involved in women's rugby for a long time. There's been a lot of talk about Eve, even when she was like 16, 17. I felt the pressure myself for her. But, you know, she's been put through. She's been playing sevens and she's playing excellently from what I've heard. So going on in camp and what she's done up there must be amazing, because she's after bypassing Enya Breen in the centres. And I'm so excited to see her and Senny working together, you know, because from what I've seen of her, she's absolutely amazing. And it's her footwork alone is magical, Donica. A bit like yourself.
I would nearly say probably the opposite to Donica. Yeah. Fiona, what about 10? Hannah Tyrrell is going in there. And I think people have been waiting for somebody to grab hold of that jersey and to keep it.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, as supporters, we've been watching for a long time, and there's been chopping and changing, and anyone that supports women's rugby in Ireland has their opinion on this, including myself. But you know what? I'm really excited. Hannah's been in there now. She's been up training at camp, and he's stuck with her. And she offers a lot. She obviously, when I played, she played on the wing with us back in 2015 when we won the Six Nations that year. So I know what she can bring. And she's been around rugby for a long time, so I'm sure she offers that calm, collected head at 10, as well as a good kicking game. So I think with her, we're going to see, she's going to try and grab that jersey and play that green starting jersey, and now absolutely is her time to shine, and I'm excited to see her at it as well.
It feels that this team is really getting settled. I know that 2019 didn't go to plan. 2020 then things started to improve, and there's just a sense looking at how settled it is and how many familiar faces they are, and then you add in the new players and the talent and also the girls that came in last year, how much more they're going to develop, and you can't help but sense a little bit of excitement about this team.
Absolutely, it's exciting times for Irish rugby. I mean, I'm coaching some of these girls involved, and the skill level I see week in, week out is getting better and better. And now, you know, I suppose the sevens haven't really fully been involved, and with no sevens competition, they're put in there. So I'm sure at camp, I know it from back in the day, everyone's, you know, fighting for that jersey, and adding in extra players is really going to bring up aggression levels in camp, and it's going to bring the best out of them. There's some absolutely fantastic players in there and exciting players, and one I'd like to mention will be Emily Lane on the bench as well. We haven't seen much of her, but I would have coached her a little bit in UCC back in the day, and I could see her talent really coming through, and she's been up at that seven, so I'm excited to watch her in action. It just seems to be really kind of blending together, and they've had a year as well, you know, they've had a long time without game time, so I'm sure they're going to be chomping at the bit to get out there, and we're all expecting good rugby, and I'm sure they're going to put that display on for us as well.
Fiona, you mentioned Emily there, and you coached her. What jumps out for you? What are you seeing there?
For me, it's got a, you know, that kind of Craig Casey vibe, that little snipe that gets around the place. She's a small enough player, but she's aggressive, and she's got lovely twinkle toes as well, as I've discussed. But she's got this real kind of work ethic from what I've seen, and she's really kind of just that aggressive kind of annoying that wants to get into space, likes to carry, and will put forwards away in space as well. She's got that high skill level, and always has since she's about 17, 18, played underage with Munster as well, and was kind of one to watch growing up as well.
It'd be great to see Stacey Flood as well come off the bench and get her debut, but lots to look forward to. But Stephen, just from a pure, I guess, logical point of view, they're going up against a Wales team that already have a game under their belts. They have played so little rugby themselves over the last year. They've done a lot of training, but at the same time, nothing can compare to that match intensity.
No, absolutely not. That's what it's all about. You can do as much training as you want, but nothing compares to the physicality and the work rate that you need to bring to matches. And for me, it doesn't matter if it's an under 18 game or it's an international game. You know, you got to go out there and make sure that you bring your best. And you know, this is just the best stage for the girls to be able to do that. And I'm super excited. Lots and lots of rugby on our TVs over the next few weeks. And you know, I'll be certainly getting behind the girls and you know, cheering them on.
Fez, we know better than anyone, the last thing you want to do is take on any opposition after, you know, coming off the back of a disappointing result. And Wales went down 53-0 to France. There will be disappointment with that, and we know Sophie Spence is involved in this squad. We're going to see a different performance from Wales this week.
Well, you would like to think so, and you know, as a coach or even as a player, you want to see a reaction, especially with such a heavy defeat. You know, we've been on both sides of it, Donegal ourselves, and you know, the disappointment, you got to put it quickly behind you. Sometimes it's about drawing a line in the sand. Sometimes it's about going through video analysis with a fine tooth comb and, you know, picking out every single flaw and to try and get the best out of you. But most of the time, it's a mixture of both. And, you know, Wales will be very dangerous if they can get their tails up and they play a good brand of rugby. I suppose they're wanting to emulate the men's team and, you know, try and get that winning mentality breathing through the women's game as well. But, yeah, you know, when you go down at a heavy defeat, the first thing you want to do is try and bounce back.
Fiona, we did see it last week and it was disappointing, but we did see the gulf between professional and semi-professional, between, you know, France and England compared to Wales and Scotland. Oh. But Adam Griggs is saying we're somewhere in the middle, and the amount of training camps he's excited about. Do you think, you know, that we can bridge that gap that they haven't been able to do?
I definitely think so. I obviously, with the opposition, as Stephen just talked about, I mean, they're on the back of a heavy defeat. I watched that game against France, and, you know, Wales probably weren't at their best. They've an old coaching setup, but, you know, as you say, they've a game under their belt, and you can never kind of underestimate what that can do to push a squad or to push a squad on. I think, from what I've seen, the girls are like fully working but nearly full-time professional athletes at the moment. I suppose with COVID going on, they've had that chance to really kind of work hard. They would have had way more camps than would have been planned with the World Cup, and I suppose the Six Nations being postponed a little bit. It gave them a chance to really work together, and they are absolutely, from what I've seen of the girls I know, and they're absolutely flying the roads, getting the fittest they can believe. They've bought into whatever Adam Griggs is selling them, and they're absolutely pushing on through. And to be honest with you, I really think we're going to see a different Ireland squad than we've been seeing in the last couple of years, and I'm very, very excited at where they're at. Are they up to that England-France level just yet? I'm not too sure, but they're definitely going to be knocking on the door, and we'll see exactly where we're at, I think, when they play that French team.
Okay, well, that Ireland-Wales game is on RTE television, and the other women's Six Nations games are on the RTE player Whistle to Whistle. So if anyone is at a loose end over the weekend, please check them out. Stephen, you were very brave today, posting your picture of yourself in your Ulster jersey. One of the best days of your life, it sounded like. Down in Thomond Park.
Yeah, I knew it was coming on, so I put that straight up because I knew Donegal was going to... I don't think you actually liked it, Donegal, did you?
Not just yet. I'm still a bit sour over it. To be fair, whatever about your jersey, you had a cape on that day, Stevie. You were like a man possessed. And that's what Ulster are going to need this weekend, isn't it?
Yeah, obviously they're in the Challenge Cup quarterfinal, both weekends, the Heineken Champions Cup and Challenge Cup. It's going to be the rugby just keeps on coming, doesn't it? It's brilliant. It's one of the things that's keeping me going for sure, is the amount of rugby on the TV. But also, they're away to Northampton this weekend. It's not going to be like them facing Harlequins, where Harlequins are going to put out more or less an academy team with a couple of other lads in it. You know, Ulster going to have their work cut out, but Ulster will be full strength, full bore. I think they're not struggling with too many injuries. Could see it might make it back for this one. Yeah, I'm excited for it. Northampton, however, you know, this after the really disappointing season they had last year in the Gallagher Premiership, they've picked themselves back up, started to get a bit of form, and they'll be going full strength also. So Franklin's Gardens, it's a hard place to go and get a result, but no screaming fans, obviously, because of COVID and everything else. So, you know, also just got to go over there, express themselves once again, and get the ball into the hands of some of the key men. And I actually fancy Ulster to get the win this weekend and keep the momentum going.
Fiona, just on it, we saw last week with Ulster, you know, they have point of difference players, but what they do up front is really solid, a brilliant driving ball now, a strong scrum, and that's exactly what you need going to Northampton.
Yeah, exactly. And in watching the Premiership as well, Northampton kind of had a dip in form, but they seem to be kind of picking that up in the last few weeks. But definitely Ulster were outstanding. I know they played a less kind of sack Harlequins team, but up front they were excellent. Erica Sullivan, I mean, even Tordy Murphy is really starting to stand up and be counted as well up there. You know, a lot of people had dismissed him after he left Leinster, and I'm just watching him now and all, he's really putting his hand up. And you know, and Marcel Cosia, I mean, what can you say about him? Some player, and that pack in general are clicking, and what they're bringing with that maul, and I suppose they're picking goals around the rough area as well. They're getting good change out of that big, strong, powerful pack, and I expect them to completely take it to Northampton and come out on top.
Yeah, some would say Marcel could see the best back row ever to play for Ulster, Fiona, but I wouldn't go that low.
Nice one, Donners.
But just on it is important, Fiona, isn't it? Like, it was a bad weekend for the Pro 14. We need Ulster to do well, and we need Leinster to do well this weekend.
Yeah, you know, I was crying at home into myself watching that Munster game. I'm absolutely Munster true and true. But, you know, it was good for rugby watching these games. And for me, it was exciting to see Munster play a better brand of rugby, but we just didn't quite get there. And the same with Connacht, I was looking forward to that. So, I mean, we've Ulster and we've Leinster left in the two cups, and the whole Ireland's going to get behind them now. But it seems to be with Leinster and Ulster in both games, it's going to be in the pack. We're going to be looking at a big game for both packs, and Leinster against Exeter is probably going to be one of the cracking games of the weekend, because we'll see exactly what both teams are made of up front there.
And Stephen, just on that, Tadhg Furlong says that Leinster are going to need brains and brawn to beat Exeter. Is he right?
Yeah, he certainly is. Exeter, a fantastic team, reigning European champions, Gallagher Premiership champions, and Leinster are travelling to Sandy Park. Believe it or not, Leinster are actually favourites for this game. And that's because they have guys like Tadhg Furlong, Cian Healy, Johnny Sexton, Hugo Keenan, Robbie Henshaw, the list goes on. A full team of internationals. They showed their class against Munster in the Pro 14 final, and they do look like a different team from that, you know, that surprising defeat to Saracens, you know, last time out in the European Cup at the Aviva Stadium. They do look a different team. You know, with a couple of players added in there, they certainly are a different animal, in my opinion. So, yeah, it's going to be hard, as Donegan knows. He's played down there. Exeter are a team that like to stick it up the jumper. Their power game, they go to it. You know, the packs don't even get the hold of the ball when the forwards are 5 yards out. But for me, Leinster, just a bit more tactical astute than Exeter, and they're going to come out on top. I do fancy Leinster. There's just something about them this season that they've got this aura and this invincibility about them. So I'm going to go for Leinster, and I'm going to go for Ulster as well. And Donegan, you might be able to answer this better than me, but you know, people who have played in the Gallagher Premiership, they almost think that, you know, the Pro 14 isn't as good quality. You know, the teams, if they were playing in the Gallagher Premiership every week, they wouldn't be doing well. And, you know, granted, there might be a number of teams in the Pro 14 that might struggle week in, week out, but I think Leinster, you know, they are the team that can really mix it with these Gallagher Premiership top teams.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you. The big thing with it is, Stephen, what I notice is it's the rivalries of AIL, but just amplified by them being massive clubs. So there's genuine dislike for years and tradition and history, and I think that's what goes into it. But I think it's really important for this game, because Rob Baxter, I feel, has learnt an awful lot from Leinster. I think his shortcomings, they might have been going well in the Premiership, but they were disappointed with some of the performances they put in against Leinster in Champions Cups before. But I think that they're at the point now that they've added to their squad, and they could really push on.
And Donegan, his comments have been really interesting in the lead up to this game. We're talking about the invincibility of Leinster, but he's not having any of it. He just says they have no fear of them. And Fiona, it was actually interesting to hear him say that the Leinster game is a significant challenge, and he asked the question, is it any bigger than anything they faced last season? What do you think?
No, absolutely not. I mean, as Stephen talked about as well, there is that kind of invincibility, and when you play in the Premiership over in England, you think they're a bit harder than some of the clubs in the Pro 14. So I absolutely 100% believe that there's no fear. They've lost to Leinster in the past, but they would have done their work, and they would have had a look at where they can go. And now they've got their English players back involved as well. You're going to see a different Exeter than you've been seeing, say, playing in the Premiership for the last maybe 3-4 games. They haven't been quite up to scratch. And I personally believe they're 100% up for this game, and we're going to see a cracking game. The cloak that Leinster have on them seems to be disappearing a little bit at the minute as well. Obviously they beat Munster well, but I think the fear around it kind of has gone away, and I suppose that might have to do a lot with kind of, you know, when internationals are being played and people aren't looking at Irish players the same way. But I'm excited. No fear with Exeter, but I definitely think it's going to be a Leinster win.
Yeah, we got Stephen's verdict. What about the Ulster? Are you going for double Irish win, Fiona?
Absolutely, double Irish win, and definitely Ulster win, and I'm going to say Leinster will just nick it, I'd say, by a couple of points.
There is some brilliant rugby. Sunday is full of all the French fixtures, and we'll be keeping an eye, of course, on Racing, who are taking on Bordeaux. A bit of interest there with Mike Prendergast, Simon Zeebo and Donica Ryan. Ron O'Gara's La Rochelle take on the Celt Sharks. It's going to be an incredible weekend. Fiona and Stephen, thanks so much for joining us on Game On. We're going to take a quick break, and we're back chatting golf.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm, a 100% natural range of cooked chicken, turkey, and beef. Natural protein your way.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. It is time to check in with Greg Allen, who is watching the Masters for us. Greg, do you have any good news?
Yes, I've got good news. Shane Lowry actually has just birdied the third. Now, it's a short par 4, 350 yards. It's uphill and it's often drivable by people like Bryson DeChambeau. But Shane took an iron off the tee. He's trusted his wedge play, played in a beautiful wedge into around 6 feet above the hole. That's the hard part, is trickling a 6 footer downhill and into the hole is the real difficult part at the moment, because the greens are running very fast. But he did exactly that, and it's a really confident start, and he's looked confident from the very beginning. His drive down the first putt on the fairway, straight down the middle, hit it just beneath the hole to 12 feet on the first and missed that for birdie, but tapped in. He was in trees on the second, the par 5, but not in a bad way. He got a really hard kick off a hummock on the fairway, and that's what one of the design issues is around Augusta. You've got to bounce it on the right side of those hummocks. It went into the trees, but it's a par 5, so he made a safe par there from the trees. But that birdie on the third, you know, with good body language, he's been talking confidently this week that really all he feels is that he needs his putter to behave, because the rest of his game has been good. And statistically on the PGA Tour this year, his long game statistics have been good. And he looks as though he has his head in the right place, because his good friend and his coach, Neil Manship, huge part of his backroom team, is there in Augusta with him. And Shane off to a confident start, one under par. He's inside the top 10, and there are only 14 players on the golf course who are under par figures, and currently, and just looking all the way down, there are 79 players on the course. So it's a nice start for Larry. In contrast, for Rory McIlroy, 4 bogeys on the front nine. He's missed it left, he's missed it right, he's had this dreaded two-way miss thing going, where the ball can be going off the face of the club left or right, and it's very hard to remedy while you're in the middle of a round. He did make a lovely birdie on the 8th, I spoke about that earlier, where he hit the green in 2 in the par 5 and 2-putted from around 15 feet, but on the following green, the 9th, didn't he miss from 3.5 feet to give that shot back? So currently playing the 11th, he is a 3 over par. Other players though are struggling, like Lee Westwood's been in great form recently, he's 5 over after 11. Sergio Garcia, the champion in 2017, 4 over after 11. Brooks Koepka, I know he had some knee surgery 3 weeks ago, he's 2 over after 12. And Dustin Johnson was struggling until he chipped in for an unlikely birdie on the 11th, where he missed the green and was more likely to go to 2 over par by the looks of things. But when the ball goes in the hole off a chip from beside the green on Augusta, you say thanks and walk off the green swiftly to the next tee. And he did that. So Dustin Johnson, the defending champion, is level par after 11. And John Rahm, who only arrived yesterday after the birth of his son, Koepka Cahill Rahm, on Saturday, he's going nicely, level after 10. The leader, Hideki Matsuyama, 4 under after 13, leads by 1 from Webb Simpson, Christian Bezuidenhout, and Paul Casey and Mark Leishman, all in 3 under. And the 24-year-old American Will Zalatoris has set the target in the clubhouse with a 2 under par round of 70.
Greg, it sounds very dramatic. Thanks so much. We might check in with you a little bit later on, but now it is time to cross over to Aintree, to Ruby Walsh, who has been very busy watching all the races today. Ruby.
Hey, Marie, how are you?
Not too bad at all. So, Ruby, a lot happened over there today. We're talking about drama, and there was plenty of it. Clondazobo made a third time lucky in the Betway Bowl Chase at Aintree with a really superb performance.
Yeah, it was a really good performance. Obviously, Irish eyes were trained on Tiger Roll, who jumped out smartly, Marie, but was kind of beaten quite early in the race. He can't quite go the gallop grade one horses go. He's way more effective in handicaps. But Clondazobo sat close to the pace. Mr. Fisher, who'd made loads of mistakes at Cheltenham in the Ryanair Chase, was up to his old tricks again today, and he eventually got rid of Nico de Bonneville at the first fence on the second circuit. That left Clondazobo in front, and he coasted home, and he was a really impressive winner. Paul Nicholls had put cheap pieces on him today at the recommendation of his rider, Harry Cobden's, and they worked an absolute treat.
I heard Harry talking about them afterwards, and it seemed he was trying to convince Paul for quite some time to put those cheek pieces on. Why would they have not listened to him?
That's a good question. Usually Paul Nicholls would. Paul Nicholls would be very proactive with changing tactics or changing equipment or anything like that, but no, they didn't. And look, the Clondazobo has three owners, Paul and Marianne Barber, Jed Mason and Sir Alex Ferguson, so probably lots of people had lots of opinions, and it took a while for them all to come to the one consensus.
Yeah, well, it certainly seemed to pay off, because even in the commentary, the suggestion was that Clondazobo was out in front for quite a long time, and there was question marks over whether or not he'd be able to sustain it, but Harry Cobden just seemed to get the best out of him.
He absolutely bolted in. I'd love to see him come into Punchestown now to take on Manila Indo, flat track, 3 miles, good ground around Punchestown. That'd be a great clash and would add great spice to the contest. Paul Nicholls is talking about maybe going for the Bet365 gold cup with him on the last day of the season in Sandown. That's a handicap where he'll have top weight. I'm a believer in grade one horses running in grade one races. I think it'd be great if he came, but that's a decision that they will have to make. And he was the third leg of a treble for his owners, Marie. Jed Mason's colours were carried to victory in the first race. The Manifesto Novice is chased by Protectorat under Harry Skelton for his brother Dan. Got up to beat the Shunter of Emmett Mullins, is ridden by Brian Hayes. And the Shunter, he just made mistakes that the last four fences, he missed all four of them, and that was quite costly as Protectorat galloped out a good winner. And in the second race then, the first leg of Paul Nicholls' great day, Mon Miral, won the Doombar Anniversary 4-year-old Juvenile Hurdle. Really impressive performance again, carrying those colours of Jed Mason's. I rode plenty of winners in them back in the day. I won that race Clan de Zobo, won on a horse called What a Friend many years ago for Jed and Sir Alex Ferguson. So they've been long time supporters of Paul Nicholls's, and they had an absolute beano of a day today.
Yeah, and it was actually great to see Alex Ferguson there and see him interviewed. He did look in really good spirits. And then in the Betway Aintree Hurdle, Jack Kennedy again to the fore in Abracadabras, and just seemed like a really clever race from him.
It was a really clever race. Like, the race was full of drama as well. Obviously, Jason the Militant was favoured for Henry de Bromhead and Rachel Blackmore, but Jason the Militant ducked right on the approach to the, not sure which number hurdle it was. It was the second one in the back straight on the second circuit. He just shimmied to his right and got Rachel unbalanced before he took off. All her body weight got outside of her hip. So if you can imagine, her right leg is over the horse, but all her body weight is outside her left leg, and she couldn't keep the partnership intact. And look, there's no other way of putting it, as jockeys would say, as she would say herself, she fell off. It happens. And when you get loose or unbalanced, for the simplest of things, you can often come off, whereas horses can make very bad mistakes, but your body weight stays in the right place and he'll stay on. So I'm sure she was quite cross with herself after, but Jack was very good in Abracadabra. We saw him at Cheltenham on Galvin, in Manila Indo in the Gold Cup, and he was very good again here. When Jason Hamilton ran loose, he got onto the front of the field. Nico de Bonville had to deal with him then, riding Bouvard there, but Jack bided his time, and when he produced him to challenge between the last two hurdles, he used Jason the Militant, who was loose, running loose in the field, he used him as a target. It was a very clever piece of riding, and Jack is a young man that he's riding way beyond his years. He's only 21 years of age, and he's an exceptional talent.
It's phenomenal, really, just thinking how young he is, and in that race with the loose horse, just to seem to have that presence of mind to make the right decision.
Yeah, that's exactly what he does. He did the very same thing in Cheltenham when he turned into the home straight in the National Hunt Chase on Galvin. There was three horses in front of him. The right decision was to stay where he was and ride for a gap on the inside. 9 out of 10 people would have switched and come around the horses in front of him, but Jack didn't. He makes so many of the right calls on the big occasion. And today, to have the confidence to go and use the loose horse as his lead, as his target, and that meant he was able to challenge at the right time. And you have to remember too, Marie, even though he's only 21, he's broken his leg three times, he's broken his collarbone four times, he's had horrific injuries for a young man, yet he's still able to come back with the mindset and the mentality to be better than where he left off. And that's not an easy thing, to keep coming back. And I have huge admiration for him. I know what injuries can do to you physically and mentally, and to watch him just keep coming back and be better, I hope he gets a good run at it, because he really does deserve it.
Yeah, and he should, all going to plan, have a really long career ahead of him. It wasn't to be for Patrick Mullins though, in the Rose Patterson Fox Hunters Chase.
No, it wasn't. Billaway was a short price favourite, but I was worried enough about him, Marie, coming back down in trip. He'd ran in the Fox Hunters in Aintree over 3 miles and 2 furlongs. He came down 5 furlongs to today in Aintree. The Fox Hunters is 2 miles and 6. And Billaway just isn't the quickest horse in the world. And he was always going as fast as he was able to go. That put his jumping under pressure. He made a mistake at Fine Haven, which is the fence after Beecher's Brook. He then made a mistake at the Canal Turn, which is the next fence. And when you're flat out and you're getting back through the field, you need to be jumping well, and those mistakes are really costly. They put him another 12 or 14 lengths further back than he wanted to be, and he just couldn't make up the ground. But Cousin Pascal was a really good winner, and I thought his rider James King was very brave when they jumped the last fence and the famous run in an entry where they have to drift over to the right and get out around the chair onto the elbows, they call it. James King rode for a gap down the inside of David Maxwell, and he got the split he needed to win the race. It was a brave bit of riding.
So tomorrow, Ruby, what can we look forward to?
Yeah, great racing here again tomorrow, of course. And you shouldn't forget, Marie, that Rachel Blackmore, after being, I suppose, having a poor day up until then, did win the last for Arthur Moore, and Me Too Please. So she rounded out the day on a high note for Arthur, who's had great success at Aintree in the past, you know, with native upmanship and horses like that, and wouldn't have been probably going as well as he used to be going, but he produced Me Too Please to win the bumper, and I'm sure Rachel was delighted with that. But tomorrow, brilliant racing again tomorrow, Marie. It's and a lot of English horses or English trainers seem to have realised before Cheltenham that maybe they didn't have the ammunition to beat the Irish horses, and they kept a lot of their horses fresh for here. In the weakest race is probably the first novice hurdle, the Betway top novices hurdle. Doosart will be favourite there, but at 250 you have Chantry House, who's a really good winner of the Marsh Chase at Cheltenham for Nicky Henderson and Nico de Bonneville. He's taken on Fiddler on the Roof in the big breakaway, who are second and third behind Monkfish in the Brown Advisory Plate. At 3:05 in the Marsh Chase, they've Politolog taken on Fakir Dudari, Dashiell Drasher, Master Tommy Tucker and Notebook. And many people fancy Notebook, actually, for Rachel and Henry stepping up in trip. They're up to 2.5 miles tomorrow. He'll have his chance. Over the National Fences, you have the Topham Chase. Patrick Mullen steps in for the injured Paul Townend, taking the ride and Live, Love, Laugh. Rachel Blackmore rides Visio Man. My fancy there would be Caribbean Boy of Nicky Henderson's, the mount of Daryl Jacob. And at 4:40, the last of the grade ones, Paul Nicholls produces Brave Man's Game, who was third behind Bob Ollinger at the Cheltenham Festival in the Ballymore Novices Hurdle. And Rachel Blackmore rides Cape Gentleman for Emmett Mullins. And Simon Torrens is on Street to Die Young for John McConnell. They're the big dangers to Brave Man's Game. But some really good racing here again tomorrow. And of course, it's all building to Saturday. This whole meeting is about the Grand National, and that gets underway at 5:15 on Saturday evening.
Okay, thank you so much, Ruby. We will check in with you again tomorrow. Enjoy it. Now it is time to return to Greg Allen, who was watching the Masters for us. And Greg, Rory has been busy.
Yeah, busy in the water beside the 11th green, unfortunately. So took a drop there and did very, very well to get up and down and make a bogey on 11. So at the moment, Rory McIlroy back on 4 over par after 11 holes. Shane Lowry, the opposite direction. He just parred the fourth hole, very difficult par three, playing around 240 yards. And he just cleared the bunker to the right of the green, and it was right on line with the flag. And he two-putted there from around 35 feet for a safe par. That's one of the difficult holes negotiated. Lowry with the birdie in the third from 6 feet is 1 under par inside the top 10 after 4 holes. The leader, Hideki Matsuyama, 4 under after 14, and Mark Leishman has just joined him. 4 birdies in the first 6 holes, he's 4 under after 6. So they are the leaders, and 4 under, 1 clear of the men on 3 under par, and they include Brian Harman, the American, who has posted the low round of the day so far, a 69, and we've also seen a round of 70 for Will Zalatoris, and Paul Casey is in the group on 3 under par. So I think at the moment the top European.
Okay, Greg, thanks so much. I know it's only just started, but the drama already, I'd say it's going to be some weekend. We're going to take a really quick break.
Game on 2FM. With Green Fern, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein your way.
Game on 2FM.
It is almost 7 o'clock. We have time to cross over to Tony O'Donoghue at Tala Stadium for the Republic of Ireland women's game against Denmark. Tony?
Yeah, it's still Republic of Ireland nil Denmark 1, half an hour played here. Denmark took the lead on 9 minutes. Nicolene Sorensen with a shot that went through goalkeeper Grace Maloney. Ireland have been looking for a better class opposition, and they've got it certainly in Denmark. By the way, did I mention the game is live on the RTE player? It's on the RTE player.
Thanks, Tony. Well, we are going to be going home now and watching that. That is all we have time for. Dara Stewart is up next.
Live across the nation, this is RTE.